Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Row, Connor Newt here with you on this Tuesday morning. Talking a little Titans, and to help us do that, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Justin Mello of the Draft Network, author of Titans of the South as well. Justin, good morning. How are you?
Doing well. You know, gentlemen, I was doing better before that clip reminded me of the insufferable Florida Panthers and what they did last night.
They are an absolute machine right now. There's no doubt about that. Just punked the Edmonton Oilers last night. We'll see how the rest of the series goes on that front. Justin, we had you on a few months ago to talk about Titans of the South and that book release that you had. Tell us about what's going on right now with the 2025 pack.
Yeah, we've got an updated version of it. So the book, you know, features a summary of every Oiler and Titan season in franchise history, starting with the Oilers' inaugural campaign in 1960. So we've got season-by-season breakdowns, schedules, starting lineups, statistical leaders, all-decade teams, full-color photography. We've just updated it for the 2025 year. So there's a limited quantity available that will feature an updated, a new chapter featuring the 2024 season. But in truth, it wasn't a whole lot of fun, so that chapter is going to focus more on the offseason and drafting Cam Ward here at number one overall. That updated version is on sale now on the official book website, TitansOfTheSouth.com. It's available for just $20, including free shipping across the entire country. And with your purchase, not only are you getting the new chapter, but you're getting a really cool free gift included, and that is a illustrated player trading card. That's the Titans illustrated player trading card, a collectible, if you will, that we've had created to give away as a free gift with every purchase. That's TitansOfTheSouth.com, available right now.
Justin, doing this project, what's the biggest thing you learned about this franchise that you had no idea about going in?
You know, it sounds kind of silly, but one of the probably the most fun fact I learned while I put this together was, now, this didn't occur three drafts in a row because they traded some of their picks. But I don't know that enough Titans fans realize that this franchise, with three first-round draft picks, their three first-round draft picks in a row, drafted Earl Campbell, Mike Munchak, and Bruce Matthews.
Yeah,
that was
good.
The Oilers' run of three first-round draft picks. I would dare anyone to find me any three-pick stretch an NFL history across any franchise that's better than that one.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I mean, I've never really thought about it in those terms, but that's unbelievable stuff there. So, Justin, you bring up Cam Ward. Obviously, a ton of excitement around here about him, what he could be for this team, this franchise. As you look at the offense as a whole right now, what do you make of what Cam Ward has to work with, and what are your realistic expectations for him heading into year one?
Well, you certainly like what they've done to build the offensive line in front of him. You know, yes, they probably overpaid a bit for Dan Moore Jr., but I don't blame them for throwing money at a problem that's been a recurring one in recent years, right? No more Andre Dillard's, no more Dennis Daly's. You can't go through that anymore. So they throw some money at the issue. They will be better at left tackle. Well, there's no doubt about it. You expect a step forward from Peter Skoronski entering his third year. I've spoken with a lot of people around the league who expect him to take a big, big step this year, establish himself as one of the better guards in the league. And then you bring in a veteran, experienced right guard, you know, like Kevin Zeitler, who's going to play next to J.C. Latham at right tackle, who they're moving over from the left side. So this offensive line is finally starting to look like a complete unit. You know, this revamp has been going on for about 2-3 years, and I would dare to say they have potentially reached the conclusion of that. You like what they've got at running back, a two-headed monster in Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears. They need Tajay to be healthier this year, more productive, take some of the pressure off not only Pollard, but of course Cam Ward as well. He needs a two-headed monster there in the backfield. It's TBD at wide receiver, right? That's the big question. It looks like Calvin Ridley and friends. How quickly can those rookies hit the ground running? You know, Alec Iomanner, I think, got a great shot to come in and compete for that X receiver spot on the boundary. They had NWI and DeAndre Hopkins play that spot last year. They're, of course, no longer here. Can Alec Iomanner sort of take that? You know, Van Jefferson's probably going to start there to begin with. How quickly can the rookie from Stanford take that spot? Does Xavier Restrepo make the roster? I lean towards yes. That chemistry with Cam Ward's going to be important. Perhaps he can play a rotational role in the slot behind Tyler Lockett. And then you've got Shimeray DK, who might be the X factor of them all. We saw him run those deep post routes last year with terrific success at Florida. Does he get into the mix? They're probably going to start him out at Z, which is where Calvin Ridley plays. So how many snaps does he earn? Again, that, you know, that's TBD. Going to be tough for him to get into the lineup. But they've got some game breakers at that spot, young ones. If they can ascend and grow alongside Cam Ward, there's no reason that he can't have, you know, in relation to expectations, maybe a Caleb Williams-like rookie season. And I know, you know, the Bears didn't have a great year. But when you look at what Caleb Williams did, he got better as the year, you know, progressed forward. 20-plus touchdowns, 3,500-plus passing yards. That's the type of year I think Cam Ward could have in Tennessee in year one.
Okay, a couple things you said there, Justin, piqued my interest. You know, I have to agree. I mean, it's hard to get worse than they have been up front. But first of all, how much of an upgrade do you think Dan Moore is? And you mentioned people expecting a big step from Peter Skoronski. I'm just wondering why that is. Like, I feel like he took a step last year, and there were times when he played well, but I still have some concerns about his lateral quickness. Why is the expectation that he'll take a huge step?
Well, I'll start with the question about the protection. Number one, you know, bringing in Dan Moore, there was a lot made about the amount of sacks he gave up last year. There were a couple things that I think are going to work big time in his favor, and I have no doubt that Mike Borgonzi identified this throughout the process and is why they were willing to pay him what they did. First of all, I mean, the rushers in the AFC North, what he was dealing with, the Myles Garretts, the TJ Watts, not going to quite be as good as it was. In the AFC South, you still got some guys, right? Your Will Andersons, your Daniel Hunters. He's going to have to play good ball, no doubt about it. But I do think removing him from the AFC North will be helpful. And then you've got to look at the quarterbacks that he was protecting last year. I mean, Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, historically speaking, take a lot of sacks. They hold on to the football. They are not easy quarterbacks to protect. Yes, I know Cam Ward is a rookie coming into the league, but you look at the pocket presence, you look at what he was able to do at Miami to navigate and extend the pocket and get out of those sacks and create off script. I think that's going to help Dan Moore a lot this year, put up some better numbers. Peter Skoronski, you know, some of the people I've spoken to across the league, number one, it's year two of the Bill Callahan and Brian Callahan system. You expect them to feel a bit better in the offense. And keep in mind, last year was really the first year he had that was normal, if you will, right? The rookie season was completely or very close to completely derailed by that emergency appendectomy that he had. So this was the first year two was, that he could kind of come and have a normal year, but he still had to learn a new offense, learn a new system with Bill Callahan up front. Not to mention the stability, I think, would be the third factor. Again, having a better left tackle next to him in Dan Moore Jr. Hopefully Lloyd Cushenberry, you know, continues recovering nicely from that Achilles at center. But when you combine the stability, you combine year two in the offensive system, and again, being further removed from that peculiar rookie year that he had with that appendectomy, I think there are a couple reasons why you expect Peter Skoronski to take another step in year three.
Justin, as you look at the defensive side of the ball for the Titans, how concerned are you about their ability to impact the quarterback based on what's currently available to them on their roster right now?
I am fairly concerned. I think it'd be silly if you weren't. You know, they recorded the third fewest sacks in the NFL last year. They only had 32 takedowns. There were only two teams that had fewer than them. Their sack leader was Harold Landry. You know, they released him from a bloated contract. I get it. Was no longer as efficient as the numbers indicated he was. But you're still moving on from your sack leader. And you didn't go out and get many upgrades. You bring in a guy like Draymond Jones, who's got some inside-outside versatility. But based on the needs on your roster, you're probably going to be playing him outside. And he didn't fare that well in a similar role in Seattle last year. That's partially why the Seahawks released him from his contract earlier this offseason. You draft Femi Oladejo in the second round. How early is he going to be ready to play? We know he's still acclimating. He used to play off-ball linebacker. He made a midseason position switch this past year to edge. In fact, if you paid attention to his process, you know, during the pre-draft circuit, he said the Senior Bowl was when he really started feeling comfortable playing edge. That was only a couple of months ago. That's a big jump to go from I just got comfortable playing it to now I've got to play it at the NFL level. I'm incredibly high on him. He's a kid I got to know well throughout the pre-draft process, had numerous conversations with. I see why the Titans fell in love with him and love the personality, the leadership, the energy, the commitment, the willingness to get better. It's all present, but it's going to be a process for him. How quickly do they expect him to contribute? You worry that it might be a little too quick based on what they have on the roster. Again, they're relying on a guy like Arden Key, who we know is at his best when he's asked to be a rotational rusher. They don't have that luxury. They're going to ask him to play a lot of football. And the same goes for Draymond Jones, who's probably going to play outside on early downs, and I think can maybe kick inside on third down, maybe replace a guy like Tavondre Sweat, who hasn't shown a lot of pass rushing efficiency yet. I think Draymond Jones kicks in there. You put Femi Oladejo on the edge on third down. You certainly have to have questions on how much better, if at all, this unit is from a year ago.
Jeffrey Simmons is going to be a topic this week. I would expect him to be available at some point. You know, he didn't show up for the voluntary stuff. How big of a deal do you think that is, Justin? Also, what do you think is a fair expectation for that tandem inside?
I thought it was a big nothing burger. You know, if you look across the league, there are a ton of veterans that don't show up to voluntary OTAs. People always forget the word voluntary, or at least fans do on social media. He'll be at mandatory minicamp. I mean, I'd be stunned if he wasn't. This is not a contract dispute. They paid him. They paid him well. I'd be fairly shocked if it was if there was anything that materializes out of that story. Expect him to be in Nashville for mandatory minicamp. He doesn't want to get fined, right? Nobody does. And you do expose yourself to financial penalties when you're not there. So the Titans certainly expect to have perfect attendance. They don't have anybody that's really in a position with any leverage for a contract dispute. A couple guys would like to sign extensions, your Roger McCreary's, Amani Hooker's, who are on expiring deals, but they don't have enough leverage, I think, to not be there. When you look at the duo of Jeffrey Simmons and Tavondre Sweat, I thought it was very good a year ago. I thought Brian Callahan gave good, concise answers on what he's looking for from Tavondre Sweat. That's a bit more pass rushing efficiency. He only had a sack or two last season, so you'd like him to impact the pocket a bit more this year. That was a theme for him coming out of Texas, right? Not a lot of sack production for the Longhorns either. When you're that big, you expect you're getting, you know, a two-down nose tackle. But when you draft him top 40, you do need to see a bit more pass rushing production than he provided throughout his rookie season. With Jeffrey Simmons, for me, it's all about staying healthy. I think we know that he could be a dominant football player. Look, he plays hard, and that's led to some injuries, especially late in seasons. You know, when the Titans have found themselves in the midst of lost seasons in recent years outside of playoff contention, it hasn't made a whole lot of sense to have him on the field based on what he's been dealing with in recent years. They need him healthy. They need to be a competitive football team. They need 15, 16, 17 games out of him as opposed to 11, 12, 13. If that duo is healthy, and again, it's Tavondre Sweat, who should take a step forward, who I thought was good as a rookie, don't get me wrong. You just want to see some improved pass rushing efficiency out of him. The sky's the limit for a duo like that.
Justin Mello with us here on the program. Again, check it out, titansofthesouth.com. You can order the 2025 pack. Justin, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning.
Pleasure was all mine. Appreciate you.
Absolutely. We'll react to what Justin had to say coming up next. Take your thoughts on the Titans. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Robbie and Rex Rowe, 1025-1063, the game. Tune in to ESPN 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on Norfolk. Pregame beginning at 5:20. First pitch at 5:35. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds baseball on ESPN 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Appreciate Justin Mello for being with us in the last segment. Joe, I can't find anybody who's not over-the-top concerned about the Titans' pass rush, or lack thereof, right now, which is always a good feeling heading into minicamp and training camp around the corner on that front. Did seem like Justin Mello pretty upbeat and excited about the Titans' offensive line there. It was interesting to hear him say that he's talked with people around the league that are expecting a pretty big jump from Peter Skoronski in year three. What do you make of that?
Be great for the Titans, for sure. And yeah, I hear, you know, as we've talked about, you know, the appendectomy is something worth keeping in mind. His rookie year, I thought it was up and down last year. You know, not as much of a step last year as you would have hoped. Doesn't mean he can't take another step. I think expecting Peter Skoronski to be like one of the best guards in the league, it's a little bit of a see to believe type thing.
Yeah, it's hard to get there.
I think, you know, and also mentioned Cam Ward having a Caleb Williams type year. That'd be awfully good. I know they didn't win a lot, but Caleb Williams still, given all the challenges, and yes, they put some good people around him. He certainly had a better group of players around him, I would say, quite a bit better than what Cam Ward has this year. So if he has a season like that, that's gigantic.
Yeah, I mean, he's at 3,500 yards, 20 touchdowns, 6 picks last year. Now, I mean, the only thing with Caleb Williams that you'd probably like to see go up is like his yards per attempt was 6.3.
So pretty low.
You'd like to see that number go up
a
little bit.
They threw a lot. They lost a lot.
They did. They threw a whole lot. But, like, Cam Ward, if Cam Ward completed 62.5% of his passes, threw for 3,500 yards, 20 touchdowns, 6 picks, I think you'd be pretty excited about that if you're a Titans fan in year one.
And what was the Bears' record? What were they, 7?
They were 5-12.
They were 5-12. It's still – that's fine, too. 5-12. With those numbers – and that, you know, let's take that exact scenario, because remember, Caleb Williams did lose his head coach his rookie year, and a lot of that had to do with whatever the hell Eberflus was doing on Thanksgiving when they should have beaten the Lions. And I'm like,
too much tryptophan in his body.
Am I watching this right now? Is this actually happening? And then that got him fired. Like
100%
directly got him fired. So let's say there's no egregious in-game management stuff from Brian Callahan. Cam Ward has a season like that, roughly the same numbers, and the Titans go 5-12. Brian Callahan, your head coach in 2026 or no?
I say no.
No? Okay.
I'm not saying it's right, but I say no.
I mean, the whole point is, can you develop a quarterback?
I know.
Is it not?
That's what you would think. This is a franchise that likes to fire people.
Yep. I'm gonna guess, and we may have this exact scenario.
We
can revisit this. I would guess that he keeps his job.
Okay.
If Cam Ward looks good. And again, because that's the difference, of course, in those situations is that Eberflus is a defensive guy. He's like former Colts D coordinator. Yep. So it already was like, do you want a non-quarterback guy?
Well, apparently Caleb Williams had a lot of concern about Eberflus and the staff heading into it.
Well,
wonder if that was ever vocalized to the front office and ownership group. Man, this guy might be an idiot.
Maybe it was well-founded, too, by
maybe
the way.
So
you're already in the mindset of, maybe we need to go get a quarterback guy for our quarterback. Yep. Here, you have a quarterback guy for your quarterback. That's what he is, right?
That's what he's supposed to be.
Yeah, so if he plays well, that doesn't essentially reflect well on the most important part of the why you were hired?
I'm with you. I mean, I would say, again, at the end of the day, the most important part of why you're hired is ultimately to win. So you would be talking about a 3-14 season and a 5-12 season in that scenario stacked on top of each other, which is not very good. I'm with you, though. Like, really, as an observer of this team this year, the only thing that I really care about is how good does Cam Ward look? That's really like about the only thing. Okay? I mean, you know, the offensive line, and really the reason I care about the offensive line is because I want Cam Ward to look good. Like, it all comes back to Cam Ward with this team. So, you know, if Cam Ward, if you're feeling pretty good about the progress that he's made in year one, I don't think I would move on from the coach after that. I just don't know that I trust the Titans not to do that.
Yeah. Well, they can fire Rannigan because he's coaching a crappy team.
Yeah.
Just refire Ran. Dude, it's like when players, they go back and sign a one-day deal with their team so they can retire. You can just do that with Ran. Hire him for one day and fire him again. And then everybody can feel
look,
better.
I'm still looking forward to the idea that somebody threw out there last week with us that, you know, J-Rob has started his media tour now.
Yeah.
So give me a Ran and J-Rob podcast. I'd listen to that.
Ran-Rob.
Yeah, Ran-Rob.
Ran-Rob. Awesome. The Ran-Rob pod would be awesome.
Our first guest is Amy Armstrong, welcome to the program. How we doing?
Oh, God.
615-737-1025, our
Mike
phone
Vrabel.
Number. A couple other thoughts to get to on the Titans front, plus a draft thought for the Predators, some of the latest stuff that's being floated around out there. We'll get into all that. Coming up, the Rex Rant at 745, and Blake Topmeyer will be with us at 830 from USA Today, talking all things college sports. Robbie and Rex Rub, 1025, 1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063 the game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road coming up at 745. Blake Topmeyer from USA Today will be with us coming up at 830. We'll get into all things college football with him. Joe, a couple more thoughts to get to on the Titans front, reacting to our conversation with Justin Mello. Another thing, you talked about Io Manor and the opportunity in front of him right now to step in at receiver. And he called it Calvin Ridley and friends, which is, I think, is interesting. This is just my initial reaction when he started talking about, you know, Van Jefferson maybe initially being the starter. And then the question is, like, how quickly, as they go through camp, as they head into the preseason, can Io Manor or DK or one of these rookie guys step in and take that role? I would say this, and this is no disrespect to Van Jefferson, who has carved out a somewhat nice NFL career for himself at this point, but we've gone through the numbers and what he's done over the last few years, and it's not overly impressive. If Van Jefferson is starting for this team week one, to me that is a very big concern. I need one of these rookies to step in and to show enough throughout the process of camp here that they're on the field more than Van Jefferson is in week one for the Tennessee Titans.
Totally agree. Yeah, it's Van Jefferson starting would be like, and I know that there was a lot more excitement for this guy when they first acquired him, but it's like Robert Woods getting a lot of snaps. It's like, yeah, and I know there's like the Rams connection there too, but it's, you're well past your prime, and you've had a nice career, and it's good to have a veteran in the room, and you're going to certainly be in the rotation somewhere. But if you can't beat that guy out at some point, I think just right, like you start out, of course, the
sure.
veteran.
Yeah.
But as camp goes on, you want to see separation and like, oh, that kid's got to play. And if not, then, yeah, you're really going to be pretty pedestrian at that position overall, I would say. Because that's what Van Jefferson is. He's fine.
Yeah, he's okay. I mean, you're talking about a guy that should be at the very bottom end of your receiving room in Van Jefferson on an NFL roster. He had 24 catches for 276 yards last year and two touchdowns. The 2 years before that, he played 12 games in 2023, caught 12 balls for 101 yards. And that is with the Falcons. Also played five with the Rams and caught 108 yards. So total in 2023, 20 catches, 209 yards. So the last 2 years, 20 catches, 24 catches, and under 300 yards in both seasons. I mean, you're talking about a fifth guy at that point.
Yeah. That guy shouldn't start for you. He shouldn't start for an NFL team. The question is, have you done enough – you know, with your fourth-round pick
right.
to make that the case. Or there's other combinations, other guys who are going to be competing for sure.
So, Mello's got Restrepo making the team too. A lot of people have Restrepo
there we
making
go.
The team.
I'm on team Restrepo making the team. Now, I'm not on team Restrepo Rookie of the Year, which I think some Titans fans are. But I'm on team Restrepo making the team.
It's like, wow. I think Restrepo's going to have 1,000 yards out there this year. I would love to know, like what you get odds for him to win Offensive Rookie of the Year right now. I don't think those odds currently exist.
10,000 to one?
Yeah, maybe so. I don't know.
I'd put a buck on that.
Hey, why not? Tiger Eyes on YouTube. And by the way, again, we've been locked out of the text line. We have been excommunicated from the text line.
Help
here on
us,
the program.
Chase.
So hit us up on the YouTube chat or on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Tiger Eyes says, I'm guessing Treylon Burks won't make the 53-man roster. I am interested to see by the time training camp comes around, like, is he able, like, because he was running, there was video the Titans put out either last week or the week before at the OTAs where he was running around. So he was, Brian Callahan was asked about him the next day, and he was like, yeah, he's not really like doing stuff. Like, he's not in team period right now. He's kind of doing his own thing. Like, I am very interested to see if he makes the team. Like, my initial response to that heading into camp is going to be no, he's not going to be on the roster. And I wonder if he can do anything to actually change that.
Well, look, the thing is, there is still opportunity. If you're him, there aren't many places you'd rather be to try to make this happen.
I would agree.
Than here. And he does have the talent to do that. But I'm also guessing the same thing, because I think inconsistency / injury, one or both of them will get him,
yeah,
as they have
his entire career to this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But could he? Like, if he had a camp, obviously, or, you know, even now here in minicamp and stuff, like 2023, well, then he'll start until, you know, I mean, that's the reality of, I don't see it happening. It seems like that injury that he had at Minnesota has in some way kind of lingered. That's not the whole story, but I'm just saying
that. Well, and if it's not that, then it feels like it becomes something else pretty quickly. Like,
yes.
He's had a heck of a run on the injury front here. Now, some of that has been, you know, remember the play in Pittsburgh where he's just like diving on the sideline and he lands on his head and he just
he's weird stuff. Yeah.
He got, you know, obviously got smoked in the Philly game there where that seemed to really change things for him, where mm-hmm. he took the shot in the end zone. But with him, he's one of those guys where, and this is just me, if you're Brian Callahan, I don't know that you can view it this way, but I don't really care what he does in camp, because my first question is going to be, well, that's great. He can be good in camp. Is he going to do anything in the game when he steps on the field in an actual NFL game setting? And can he get through a game without getting hurt, which is a legitimate question at this point? It doesn't happen very often with Treylon Burks.
Right.
Like, it always feels
just
like something's happening.
We're just talking about making the team.
We are.
Though,
we are. So. But like, I think that's got to factor into it, right? Like, if you're Callahan, how much stock do you put into what he does at camp when you're making these decisions, knowing in the background that to this point in his career, when it has mattered in the games, he's done virtually nothing and he gets hurt all the time?
Yeah, it's important information. But also, like, if you're going out there day after day and he's just outperforming someone else who might be on the team, how do you not give him the spot?
Sure.
Right?
I mean, yeah, I get it. It's just, based on his history, it's hard for me to really care about what he does at camp.
Yeah, yeah, I get it. Yeah, it's going to have to be spectacular, I think, because of what you just said there and what we've been talking about, because that stuff has to be a factor in the decision. You have to be skeptical. So, but then what if it is spectacular, you know?
Yeah.
And some of these other guys are very underwhelming. It's like, do you believe your own eyes or not?
Yeah, it's a fascinating question on that front. Apparently, I said he's not really like doing stuff. And Jacob on the YouTube chat says, he's not really like doing stuff is a perfect quote to encapsulate Burks' tenure with the Titans so far. Really brilliant analysis from me on that front. He's not, you know, like doing stuff out there.
I mean, it's accurate, man.
Great stuff from me there. Scott Wheeler from The Athletic, Joe, has come out with the 2025 NHL Mock Draft 2.0. So we are getting ever closer to the NHL draft coming up, in which the Predators hold the number 5 overall pick. The first one was done by Corey Pronman, and he had the Predators taking James Hagans at number 5, which we talked about on the show and heard from a lot of Predators fans that were like, yeah, sign up for that right now. I looked at Wheeler's yesterday, and it's interesting. Like, you know, it feels like the top two really aren't changing all that much, and Schaefer and Misa. He also has Frondell going number 3 to Chicago, which Pronman did as well. He's got the Predators selecting Porter Marton at number 5, who is a very good player. He is also a winger, listed at 6'3", 204 pounds, and got James Hagans sliding all the way to number 6 to the Philadelphia Flyers, which raised a lot of eyebrows yesterday, Joe, as this was getting thrown around there. You know, Hagans was a part of the group that met McDavid before the game yesterday in the Cup Final and met Gretzky and all those guys and going on the media tour. And like, you read the write-up here that Wheeler put together of the Predator selection of Marton, where he says, quote, "I'd bet the Preds strongly consider Hagans here. And does Noyers, if he's still around, or does Noyer, if he's still around, but they do have a decent center depth in their pool. I've heard they scouted Martone a lot this year. They've been starving for a high-end skill forward prospect for what feels like decades, which I think everybody around here would agree with. And Martone gives them the right shot winger, size, strength, and high-end skill. I like Martone a lot. I think he has got a chance to be a pretty good player. Here's the way I'm operating with it, and I don't know if you're Barry Trotz, if you can do this or not. To me, if you're going to take a winger over a center in a draft like this, given the number 5 overall pick, you better think that winger is way better than the center.
Yes.
I mean, there needs to be a big gap in your evaluation between what Martone and Hagans could be if you're going to justify that pick to me. I don't think it's quite as simple as, we think Martone might be a little bit better than Hagans, so we're going with Martone. To me, with the importance of that position, and specifically with the importance of that position for this franchise, there better be a gap if you're going winger over centerman. That's my thought.
Yeah, I would agree. But you could certainly use a big time winger, you know. And we've talked about Hagan's size, and there's some concerns there and things like that. So, but I would agree. Just the position of center is an immediate escalator in terms of comparing value of two guys.
Yeah, I think so. Hagans, to me, it kind of feels like he's fallen a little bit just based on some of the commentary around him. And, I mean, I guess the size really is the only thing that concerns me about him. He's 5'10", and he's listed 186 pounds. So it's not like he's like some string bean out there at 155 pounds or anything. You got to keep in mind he's also 18, so he's going to continue to grow as they move forward here. I just think he's got a lot of skill to him. And I think if you're the Predators looking at that spot, is he a perfect prospect? No. But if he's there at 5, like, I think I'd have a hard time passing on that if I'm the Preds. That's just me.
Yeah, it's, you know, reading Pronman also is tiering these guys. He has Martone as his number 3 overall player.
Yes.
With the player comp of Philip Forsberg.
Yes.
For Porter Martone, which is interesting. You know, you're talking about 6'3", 210 right now at his age. That's playing a heavy game and all that stuff. I mean, that's appealing. That is definitely appealing. He actually has Hagans as a third tier guy. He tiers it that way, with a one tier only of Schaefer, which I think a lot of people would agree. Then Misa Martone as his second tier. Oh, and Denoyer, and then Hagans, the top of the third tier, which is interesting. I don't know if tiering matters that much. Whatever, it's a top five, but it's an interesting way to put it.
It is.
He also says, you know, he's got the comp of Hagans as Nylander. So,
I mean, you take that.
Sure. You'd like to have that on your team.
Yeah,
you have to make a good choice here, and whoever you choose, you need that. That comp to come through, you know, you need that player to be the number one prospect in your organization, and to be on a fast track and to be a difference maker soon.
And then, of course, there are still people that would tier. I saw this yesterday from some other people talking about the draft. So there are some people that tier it: Schaefer, Misa, kind of right there together, and then if he's healthy, McQueen would be their third guy. And so it's going to be interesting to see how the Predators view that part of it. But we're getting closer. The NHL draft is coming up here in a few weeks, and we'll see what the Predators do at the number 5 overall pick. But the NHL Combine just got wrapped up, so a lot of discussion on those guys right now and where they're slotted as we start to head into draft talk here in the next couple of weeks here. So we'll keep you up to date on the latest on those developments as they happen. The Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. We'll have Blake Topmeyer from USA Today at 8:30. All that ahead. Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
So, Joe, defend about it. The NBA. Go.
Hey, Jared, shut up. Thanks. We've already talked about it. Go back and listen.
Well, the people in the car right now weren't.
It is that time of the day. Time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. Check it out every morning here on the program. Joseph, the floor is yours.
Thanks for bringing that up. And thanks for Don't play this song, dude. When you hear a song.
You don't like your alma mater?
Oh. Well, yeah, I like my alma mater, but like I covered their sports teams for ever. And like when you're like even just at one basketball game and then like you're right in front of the band. I mean, there's no song. There's no fight song that doesn't get old. I'm reading Paul Feinbaum's book, and he's like, Rocky Top is the most annoying song on earth. He's a Tennessee grad. I'm like, wow.
Well, can't always say smart things, I guess. We all love Feinbaum, but that's pretty dumb.
So you don't ever get sick of Rocky Top?
No.
Okay. I don't know, man.
Probably not played enough.
I don't think there's a song, a fight song that you can't get sick of.
Oh, Rocky Top, I think, is probably that
But
one.
It's actually technically not their fight song.
It's really not. Yes, by the way. Not.
All right, so I am going to talk about music, by the way, on this. And thank you for bringing up the Jared thing. You know, I mentioned this yesterday. Let me just quickly say, Jared lied again. Like, why does he have to lie?
I don't know.
He obviously, like, everybody sees him lying and hears him lying. Anybody who listens to this show knows that, like, my favorite product is the NBA of the late 80s. So everybody knows that I didn't say what he said I said, yet he still says it. He still says that I said that. It's amazing.
It's just what he does sometimes.
Yeah, it's something else. But I've got to talk about music today. Robbie, as you know, that you know I'm a concert guy, especially now. It's probably a midlife crisis to always go to every show. But that's okay. Because, you know, when you're young and you don't have any money and you miss all these shows and I never saw Kurt Cobain and, you know, I could go on and on.
Confirm, Rex Rhodes rich.
Yes, exactly, yes. We got to renegotiate these $1.5 million a year deals, but I don't want to take that to the public forum.
That's good.
So I'm pretty good with I got like the apps of the third party, ticket things and all that. I'm pretty good. I generally wait until day of a show. The only time that got screwed up for me was when Katie and I went to. You know, it was like her birthday present last year. Went to Vegas to see U2 at Sphere. And I was like, yeah, we'll wait to the day of. And then to the day of, it was like, oh, they're going up. It's supply and demand. You know, people go out. So I screwed that up. We got in, but I screwed it up. For the most part. You know, this is Taylor Swift or something where the
– Yeah, yeah.
For the most part, you wait and it's going to go down. And so that's why I tell people, like, I don't – like, Katie and I have our Dave Matthews Band stuff all mapped out this summer. I don't have any tickets. I have hotel rooms. I don't have any tickets. I'm going to buy on the day of, and sometimes, like, right before the show, you get, like, an awesome seat for cheap.
God,
that's
that would
what
make me
I
incredibly
do.
Nervous.
No, I love it. It's very simple. I mean, if you see the prices are right around face, you know, well after they sell, you know it's going to go down. So I need help from the general public. Again, I'm pretty good at this stuff. I got Brennan a nice little baby concert ticket the other day. By the way, he said it was an amazing show.
Oh, good to know.
Hey, he was like, yeah, he's like, Lil Baby, he played a couple of new songs, but mostly he played his old songs everybody loves. I'm like, I didn't know Lil Baby had old songs everybody loves.
I didn't either.
Congratulations on the concert, Brennan. I hope you enjoyed Lil Baby.
Yes.
Someone tell me what the hell is going on with Coldplay. I like Coldplay. Katie and I have seen Coldplay. We saw them at Pine Knob in Michigan, which is like their amphitheater. It's called like DT Energy, whatever. It's Pine Knob.
Sure.
Fine. It was a good show. It was probably... I don't know, 15 years ago. That's fine. I like Coldplay. Coldplay's coming to Nissan Stadium. I just saw Metallica there. Seen Red Hot Chili Peppers there. You know, some pretty good bands that this thing worked pretty well. I'm looking at SeatGeek for Coldplay at Nissan Stadium. Tuesday, July 22nd. The cheapest ticket is $460 freaking dollars.
Really?
For Coldplay at Nissan Stadium? Have you ever seen the movie Revenge of the Nerds?
Yes.
Well, then you remember the point where the nerds were selling pies that were basically just whipped cream it was just whipped cream.
So is that what you're comparing Coldplay?
Well, it's like, is Coldplay giving out drugs also while you go to the show?
I don't think so.
Again, I like Coldplay. Man. This makes no sense at all. My daughter told me about this because she wanted to go see Coldplay. I'm like, yeah, we can do that. And I'm like, dude, 300 level for 503. Here we go, 503. It's insane. And then it gets you get the good seats, and it's like $800-$900 for a cold play at Nissan Stadium. I like them. I'm not ripping them. I'm not comparing them to Creed or some crappy band.
Easy.
Someone help me with how Coldplay is like the hottest ticket in all of music in 2025 at Nissan Stadium.
I mean, this is not just a Nashville thing. I'm looking – so they're in Toronto in early July, and the cheapest one, it starts at $400. They're in Foxborough. Vrabel will probably be there July 15th. $240, cheapest one in the door. Now, they do have they're coming up, I guess, on Friday in El Paso, $164. $146 today in my house. So this trend would suggest maybe wait a little bit, and they'll come back down. Because you can buy Coldplay tickets today at Mile High Stadium in Denver for $146.
Okay. But still.
I mean, I was going to say, like, I'd like to get into a Coldplay concert for, like, $55. That'd be nice.
Like, at a stadium? Again, we saw them at an amphitheater that seats 15 years ago that seats about, you know, probably 8,000-9,000 people. This is a stadium tour. Like, yeah. What is happening at this tour? What are they doing at this tour?
I don't get it. I mean, I'm with you. I like Coldplay. I don't know that I would go out of my way to go see Coldplay. But you're right. The prices are pretty unbelievable on this thing right now.
Like, now I actually want to go more because I'm like, what the hell is so special about this concert? Yeah.
And it's working. They got you.
Maybe so.
Well, but I'm not paying this money. I mean, my God.
That's pocket change for you, Rex.
Well, that's true.
A man of your status?
Well,
come on.
If we can negotiate up to more than $2 million a year on the show, then we'll consider it. But I don't remember when our negotiations are. We got to talk to Chase. We're meeting with Chase today. We can talk about $2 million a year. But no, I'm not – like, I want to go, and I will wait until the last day. But that doesn't bode well for getting in for, like – yeah, like, I'd probably go for about 70.
You think the prices would go up or down if Creed joined them? I think they'd go up.
Creed play?
Yeah.
The Creed play show?
Maybe Coldplay open for Creed.
If they brought Scott – maybe that's what it is. They bring out – Scott Stapp comes out and mops the stage at the intermission. Which is about what I would trust him to do.
So disrespectful of Scott Stapp. It's unbelievable.
I don't even want to be. You make me do it.
I didn't make you do anything. I was just trying to envision what a cool concert that could be with Coldplay and Creed together.
Yeah, boy, it'd be really special.
Well, I hope you enjoy paying $700 to go watch Coldplay play at Nissan Stadium.
I mean, I mean, we're locked out of the text line, which we need to go negotiate that in our new contract too. I'm waiting for someone to help me out here. Like, does anybody know? I'm seriously asking the question of what is so special about this show.
I don't get it. But the trend would suggest just hang in, be strong.
Yeah,
prices will come down.
I hope so.
And I wonder if they're playing in Denver tonight. I wonder if Sean Payton gonna end up there.
I could see him.
It seems like he may be a Coldplay guy.
I could see Sean Payton. Not sure I can see Vrabel.
Yeah, I don't know.
Vrabel likes bad country and likes to sing bad country. Big Florida Georgia Line guy.
Big FGL guy?
Big FGL dude.
615-737-1025. Our phone number. Got some news and notes to get to on the NFL front coming next. Plus, a question that Rex Rowe has thrown out there that I think is very interesting in the world of college sports. We'll get into all that coming up. Robbie and Rex Rowe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.